Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I am here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, who actually
is here.
I don't know what to do with that. And Landis is with us this week. And I just wanted to mention, who is the big jock in the studio this week?
It's me.
Who rode 90 miles of the Lone Star Ride, 95 miles, something like that. And that would be LaRon. Was it you? No, it was the one that you're always picking on for being the old guy.
Well, congratulations.
Well, those old legs are doing you great.
They are.
Thank
they
you.
Are.
They really are.
Thank you.
Because I couldn't do it.
And God, am I feeling it this year. It was too hot to train this year. It was just too hot to train for it. So, I just did not train enough, but I rode just what I thought I could make. So, I did well. We have a guest today. His name is Harold Stewart. He is the founder or co-founder of Fahari Arts, which is a South Dallas arts organization. He's one of Dallas Black Pride.
I'm a paid member. My organization is a partner organization.
There you have it.
There okay, you that's why I didn't have one, because and sometimes it's now. Harold, I think, is our first guest, our first morning guest, to stay up all night to make sure he made it here today.
Good for you.
Because
good for you.
He's used to being at work at the crack of 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
That would work so well for you, Patty.
Talk about living a life.
That's
okay.
Man.
That means I leave on a good day at 9 p.m.
Mm. Oh, okay. I don't know if I would trade for that.
But you come home to a screaming kid.
I do. I do.
Tell us a little bit about Fahari Arts. What is your organization?
Fahari Arts Institute is a multidisciplinary arts institute. And we present the arts from black queer people from the African diaspora. We have a whole season of programs looking at the whole multitude of arts, from the dramatic arts to dance to theater, visual arts. We have incorporated in our last season a lecture series, all to talk about and identify and educate ourselves of what we call the black queer creative expression.
Okay.
How's that?
That's good. You started That's off lovely. With just Fahari Presents, and you wanted that to be just...
We have to talk how Fahari came into play just a little bit. And I was, and I still work at the South Dallas Cultural Center, and I begin to just notice it between black queer organization and black artists in the community, and thinking of a way to fill that gap, you know, thinking, planning, trying to identify if something like this could actually work in the city of Dallas, and looking to see what had happened in other cities before. And in the middle of that, Elaine Harris passes away. And what happened after that, you know, kind of surveying the community to see what would be done to remember him. And it was almost apparent that nothing was going to be done, at least from the black queer community. So partnered with our book club, The View of Dallas, which is a black queer book club, and put together a memorial for him. And after that event, and the spirit of that event, really talking about how do we talk about our artists, our literary figures, selves, before we pass away. And so from that came an opportunity with Green Bandana Group to do Queerly Speaking, which was a monthly open mic. And then after that, it was a film series. Then after that, it was me and J.W. Richard, who co-founded Fahari. It was like, what are we going to do next? And so Fahari really started just with an idea, and then we started producing programs. And after that first year, looking at what we had done, and then trying to identify where we wanted to go from there, and where that is where Fahari Presents comes into play and some of those other things.
Uh,
We've had J.W. Richard on mm-hmm. quite a number of times, and he's a delight. Mm-hmm. So this is we're going to complete the circle, I think, yes. with your organization.
We also had Elin Harris on
yes.
just before he died.
Yeah, I think a week yeah. or two.
Scarily, okay. right yeah. before.
Right before. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like he was on, we're having a wonderful conversation. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, he's gone.
Yeah. yeah. So... should I pray once I leave here just to make sure I'm being there? Oh, okay. Just let me know.
Out of the 28 years we've been on, I think he's the only one LaRon oh, killed.
Yeah. Chaz Bono's on Dancing with the Stars. So mm-hmm. there's the flip side of other
guests. That's true. Okay. That's true.
What are some of the things that you're presenting?
In addition to what I've mentioned, the Queerly Speaking, which happens once a month, typically the fourth Friday of every month at the South Dallas Cultural Center, we are reinstating. The first year we did the queer film series once a month, like Queerly Speaking, and had to reexamine that, because of the availability of films. And so we do it kind of on special months. So we look in March at Black Women's Month, and then we have Music Month, so we're trying to match it up with some themes. So those are two of our popular programs. In addition to that, we have the Queer Note Lecture Series that we started last year, where we have an evening of scholarly discourse, as we termed it, and really bring a scholar or a lecturer from our community, local or the larger community, to talk about what is
specifically
about.
Who's somebody that.
So last year we brought in Kenyon Farrow, and at the time he had just he had worked with Queers for Economic Justice. And the topic was building a true Black queer liberation, HIV and AIDS and beyond. But he was able to talk about ways to engage our community in larger issues around larger issues other than HIV and including that issue. But then also how we have been systematically included and, more importantly, excluded from some of the what they would call the gay agenda, things like that. And really, you know, having a conversation about that. He also talked about the importance of cultural spaces like Fahari and that what that does to an individual who is Black and queer. When you think about most of our institutes, if you're a Black gay man, being a health organization, you begin to think of yourself as a disease because that's what the organizations are. So he was able to come in and shed some light on some topics like that. This year we have Dr. Alexis Gumps, and she's going to talk because she's, you know, she's radical feminist and beautiful lady. So we're trying to figure out what we want to talk about. She does a lot of work. She's inspired by the works of Audre Lorde. And so we're looking into some of those things, and she has her a good analysis on, you know, marriage and how the Marriage Act things have been passed and what they have done and what it means to our community. So we're still trying to figure out the best topic, but she's going to be our speaker.
You know, the one time that I've gone to your film series, it was great, and afterwards there was a lot of lively discussion,
mm-hmm.
which kind of surprised me, but it was great. And one of the things I liked about it is I thought, well, this is probably a forum where a lot of African-American gay and lesbian folk don't have a chance to express themselves mm-hmm. in a larger gay and lesbian community. So have you seen more and more involvement?
Right,
from
we have. We, after that first year, and even it's a continuing thing where we examine what is the benefit to the patron and how the community has embraced Fahari. It started out as just an organization that wanted to present works by artists, but we've seen the most engagement, you know, from our community members. They are the ones who continue to speak up and invest, time and energy and money into Fahari. So we look at this whole thing of now building community through the arts, community mobilization through the arts, and a lot of that is being in conversation with the community that we serve. And so most of our programs, there is this opportunity for dialogue from the community members and things like that. So it for me, it was a new opportunity, you know, to think about and look at the effect on the arts and the people who come as patrons. And these are people who are not interested in being artists. You know, they don't want to go create an art form. They just want to be connected in a community in ways that the arts bring out. And so that is something that we constantly evaluate. How can we, in theater, we would call casting your audience. So how do we cast our audience in the work that we do?
Yeah, because the conversations weren't just around art. I mean, it's
right.
political, social, you know, all of that.
Right, and that's crucial in selecting the people we bring in and the arts that we present. I think one thing we cannot afford to be is just an organization that presents these fantasy stories that are not true to our reality. And we cannot just afford to entertain our community. So we have to have, you know, critical conversation and critical dialogue and produce a thought-provoking series of artistic programming.
And that's really good art. I mean, if it's good art, it's going to, you know, make you emote.
Exactly.
Something,
exactly.
You know, which is exciting.
And most of the programs from Pahari, or if not all of them, take place at the South Cultural...
The South Dallas Cultural Center.
Cultural
yes.
Center, we started, which is a great gym. I think it's like one of the... Those like surprising things that a lot of people in Dallas don't know about. It's a
right.
great facility.
Yeah.
How did you all get that spot?
Well, it helps when the person who's co-founding it works there. So I'm the performing arts coordinator at the South Dallas Cultural Center, but that didn't necessarily mean we could operate out of there. Mm-hmm. The first year, we were at the Backbeat Cafe doing Queerly Speaking, but we were doing our queer film series as a benefit to another partner organization of the Cultural Center, Black Cinematheque Dallas. So we were there. And then we were invited to be a partner organization by my manager, Vicky Meek. So now we have, you know, about 95-98% of our programming there. We just finished the show is still on exhibit in Design District at 1111 Studio. I-30, looking at 30 years of HIV and AIDS in Black Southern communities and having a visual conversation about that. So letting the works, you know, talk and be in conversation with visual work. So that's a program that is off-site, so to speak, but that's how.
What's been the general reception of your organization among the general Black community in Dallas? Maybe people come who... maybe don't even have a person in their family or don't have a good friend who's queer.
All of our programs we advertise are for Black queer artists, their friends and allies. And many people and Black queer people have brought their straight friends. They brought coworkers because I think we are in an age where people want to understand us. And so they've used Fahari programs as a way to say, here, this is who we are. Look, listen, learn, and if you have questions, you can ask in this format. So we've had a number of people who have come and performed, you know, for Queerly Speaking, that is straight. Some of my best friends from childhood constantly hit me up. And when you have this Facebook presence, they say they're attending Queerly Speaking. And when the broader community knows them as a straight individual, well, that speaks volume. And they defend, I'm attending this event, I'm performing at this event for these reasons. So,
do you find that when you have a straight performer, it brings more straight audience in also, and you get a bigger mix then?
Not necessarily more audience. I think it definitely is a conversation starter. It lets other artists or patrons know that it is a safe space. Many straight people leave thinking and saying, it's not what I expected, but it's so much more. And that, again, is about, you know, this, I guess, false idea of who we are and what we do behind closed doors, so to speak, in our cultural spaces. So it definitely... is a way that the word gets out. So more straight people, allies, so people who are just curious, feel comfortable to come in and see.
Mm-hmm. So you had some positive, obviously some positive experiences dealing with the larger mm-hmm. Black community. Have you had any negative feedback?
Surprisingly, no. And I'm a knock on wood, like
that's
right
great.
There. We
that's
have.
Great.
I really cannot cannot say that we have. And I think that largely is due to the South Dallas Cultural Center as well, because most individuals are used to coming to this culturally affirming space. that is very diverse, even in the audience that it brings in. So sometimes we have, you know, this very African nationalist community that comes in, which can be very different from, say, the general black community. So there is this whole aesthetic of even accepting our differences within the black community that happens at the South Dallas Cultural Center. So most people come with an open mind, ready to receive. And if I mean, you have to be blind, deaf, dumb, and crazy not to be engaged with black arts and know that there's queer people there, right? So it's like, oh, there's queer people in black arts. So many people, you know, have experienced their friends and loved ones from this community. So they understand.
Yeah, but wait a minute. How many times, like in churches, white and black, mm-hmm. I had no idea the organist was gay.
I had no idea the choir director was gay.
And I mean, and that's fine. People tell me they had no idea I was gay. But, you know, now you know. And so what does that change in terms of that knowledge? They definitely wouldn't say I didn't suspect that they were gay and all this, that, and the other. And so, you know, and people like to play ignorant, and that's fine. I live my life so they don't have to stay ignorant, right? You know, okay? Now what you gonna do? Yeah.
Patty asked, you know, how what's been the reception within the larger black community. What's been the reception like within a larger gay community?
That's a good question. And I think overall we've been pretty much accepted. One thing that Fahari started pretty grassroots. So, I mean, we did what we did where we did it. And we didn't necessarily go out to see how people are receiving this. It was, you know, the South Dallas Cultural Center, but before that, Backbeat Cafe is where we convened. We did our art, and then we went out into the larger world. When, if you can say outsiders, whoever would come in, you know, they were pretty receptive. So we haven't encountered the larger community in a way that, you know, feedback has even been evident enough to kind of document, because we do what we do in our space. We've created a space where we can go. So if you come to our space, then you have to play by our rules. So, you know, that is really how it has gone down. I mean, from coverage in The Voice and now KRA, there's pretty, it seems to be receptive.
Which, yeah, by the way, congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, but it pretty, I mean, but, and unless those people begin to speak out against it, we will never know. Mm-hmm. I think if, you know, there's always this question of, you know, why black? Or, you know, do non-black people have a place at the table? Why would non-black people come? And, you know, it is, if you want to experience the black queer aesthetic, then come, you know? And it's not to say that you are not welcome, but we are very intentional, and this is our aesthetic, this is who we are, and this is what we produce. So if you want to have an experience like that, and even challenge yourself, you know, we definitely don't go into other communities and ask them, oh, why do you do it this way? Mm-hmm. You know, we just go.
Well, but a reason to come would, you want to hear a good speaker, want to hear a good poet, right, want to hear, see a good film. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. The other station, Laurent, that you forgot to mention, that
the best radio station in Dallas, would that be this one?
Yeah, not just D Magazine now, but also Dallas Observer said we are, that talks about Fahari art. We'll be back with more. Harold Stewart is our guest right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now's the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON, P.O. Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON, Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure to put the name of the show you're supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON's pledge drive, call 214-828-9500, extension 234. Oh, yeah. It's the voice of the people. KNON. KNON.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas, Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Alrighty, actress Lisa Haley, best known for her role as Alice on the Down to Funk Showtime lesbian drama The L Word, says she was kicked off of a Southwestern Airlines plane for kissing her girlfriend. Hold on.
Is that too loud?
Very loud.
Because
there
I was turning the wrong one down.
There we go. Much better. Alicia says that the kiss was a modest one, but the airline is saying that their affection was excessive and drew customer complaints. And the only reason they approached the couple was not based on gender, but behavior. Now, the airline went on to say that after they approached the couple, they kind of, you know, started cursing and going on. And Alicia doesn't deny that claim, stating, "We take full responsibility for getting verbally upset. I don't blame you. No matter how quietly homophobia is whispered, it doesn't make it any less loud." She and her girlfriend are talking about filing a formal complaint. I don't know how far they're going to get with it, but it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's my thing. I see heterosexual couples in public all the time, just all over each other.
I know, it's just disgusting.
And, you know, no one says anything. So, I mean, I seriously doubt they were just really, really... It probably was just a peck, and somebody just didn't want to see it at all.
Well, and it's, at one point, Lisa Haley reported that it was just the flight attendant. There were no mention of other passenger complaints.
Really?
It was just the flight attendant.
Just the flight attendant. Yeah, just didn't want to see it.
And, you know, if they talk about disruptive behavior, come on, dolphin screams from two-year-olds. And
tell me about it.
There are lots of things that are disruptive on a flight. You know, people who talk way too loud. Or, you know,
now,
kick your seat. I mean, there are lots of things that happen.
Exactly.
And now, you can see it on that show about Southwest Airlines. The really
Exactly. Southwest Airlines is based where?
Dallas.
Here.
Yep.
How does that fall into our non-discrimination policy?
Yeah, where do they fall, like, on the HRC list?
Oh, they're the official airline for GLAD.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, they're like 100%er.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right. See how this falls out.
And it could be just one flight attendant.
It could be just one flight attendant.
It could be.
I kind of suspect
because
that's what
the rest of them are gay.
Grammy Award winner Melissa Etheridge is still in the throes of breaking up with her now ex-actress Tammy Lynn Michaels. And some are saying that Melissa is using California's ban on gay marriage to her advantage by claiming that she and Tammy Lynn never, ever married. It was just a commitment ceremony. Now, she is right. And back in 2003, they did have a lavish wedding, but it wasn't legal. But now that...
That's playing lawyer, though.
I don't know. Well, Tammy Lynn is filing a dissolution for marriage rather than a domestic partnership because she wants spousal support.
Yeah, she needs to call Martina.
Exactly. So that's why they're saying she's kind of using a sore advantage. I don't know. Melissa May should probably stay single after this.
Yeah. Maybe so.
Maybe so.
She needs to call me.
And then some sports news. A few weeks ago, I told you about openly gay Phoenix Suns president and CEO Rick Welts, that he was stepping down from his post and moving back to California for supposedly personal reasons. Now, Welts has been named the new CEO and president of another NBA team, the Golden State Warriors, so congratulations to him. And as of last week, the NFL has banned discrimination on sexual orientation for the first time of athletes. The inclusion was revealed in a release of the NFL's 2011 collective bargaining agreement. So, maybe...
Do you know the story behind that? Because this is interesting. First of all, neither side negotiated that in. But the place had an attorney. Do you know who it was?
Mm-mm.
Player attorney was Ted Olson. Do you know who the attorney was for the owners? No. David Boyce.
No way.
Yes.
Are you serious?
Seriously. Those were who the two attorneys were. And probably, and those, for anybody who doesn't know who they are, two attorneys who pleaded the case against Proposition 8
right.
and won, but they didn't win. They kind of, it was a total knockout. I mean, their case was brilliant.
Prior to that, Ted Olson had been the United States Solicitor General. Mm-hmm. He had some cases before on behalf of the government, before the Supreme Court, and David Boyce went up against him in Bush v. Gore back in 2000.
So right.
their opposite sides come together.
And they came together and fought. But here they're again on opposite sides. I think what happened with this was, okay, here's where the non-discrimination clause goes in. One of them wrote the non-discrimination clause. Putting in sexual orientation is no-brainer. The other one looks at it because, you know, that's the kind of thing. Are the owners really reading? I want to see what my non-discrimination clause is. No, that's the kind of thing you put in because you have to have it there. So you put it in. One of the Olson or Boyce put it in. The other one looked at it and said, oh, that looks right. So it's there.
It's there.
It didn't go in because anybody wanted it. It went in because of who their attorneys were, which is an interesting.
So now the question is, will an active NFL player come out?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Right.
We'll see.
Right. We'll see.
Good question. And you know.
And Penny has some news.
Right, when Wanda Sykes was on Ellen DeGeneres' show in the last few days, and you know, Wanda was diagnosed with breast cancer
earlier this year,
right? And had had a double mastectomy as a result because she has a big history of breast cancer in
her
family.
But I
just loved her comments on Ellen's show. And here's two great, wonderfully funny,
yes,
you know, lesbians mm-hmm. on the air. And she goes, well, you know, here I am. I'm black. I'm lesbian. Okay, cancer can't be the poster child for everybody. You know? But what I really loved was says, yeah, but you know, at least with the LGBT causes, we have a parade, we have floats, we have balloons. Uh-huh. And she goes, and I just hate to walk.
Gotta love Wanda Sykes. Yeah. You know, she's really good, apparently, keeping things under wraps because she was married, and nobody knew it. And,
right. Mm-hmm.
You know, she only came out publicly because of, you know, the end of Prop 8. And, you know, and during that rally, she just came out. Well, she had this cancer diagnosis earlier this year.
Yeah, in February.
You know, and just now saying something. So good for her, keeping her personal business personal.
That's our entertainment report. We're talking today to Harold Stewart. He is one of the co-founders of Fahari Arts, which is an arts organization that meets at the South Dallas Cultural Center, or has their performances, uses that as their space. This week is also Dallas Black Pride.
Yes.
It's the, oh, this has been going on for years, but Dallas Black Pride, or DFW Pride movement, mm-hmm. is newer.
Right.
That's a newer component of it. Tell us what's going on this week.
DFW Pride Movement is in existence about 3 years. Mm-hmm. This is their third time presenting what may be considered the cultural aspects mm-hmm. of Pride and more workshops and things like that. So this week, starting tomorrow is Thursday, there is a VIP kind of reception to work to welcome the guests that are coming from various parts of the United States, and also and be in dialogue and fellowship with them and the community here. And then Friday is the community summit. A lot of it revolves around HIV and AIDS and the state of that epidemic in Dallas and what that means for the Black queer community. And then Friday evening is the also popularly speaking that is sponsored by Fahari Arts Institute, and we do it Pride Edition for that. For this occasion, we have it at the Host Hotel, and we also have half of our program dedicated to slam poetry or competitive poetry and things like that. So that's new for us. And then after that, there's fashion shows Saturday morning and afternoon is filled with all types of workshops and things that go on. There's going to be a live taping from Glow TV, which is an online LGBT urban TV show. keynote address. So just a whole weekend. There's a on Sunday there's a worship service. So just a lot of different activities that kind of prepares you for the nightlife, because Dallas Southern Pride handles the nightlife portion of Pride and the circuit parties and things like that. So DFW Pride Movement does the daytime activities, the more cultural workshop kind of deals.
And this is a huge event that probably gets underreported. I mean, mm-hmm. thousands of people come for this. Now, what
I'm
I
all said, over.
Well, that's what I said. Harold, what was your comment?
My comment was thousands of people may come out of their house, but we're building, and definitely with the help of DFW Pride Movement, Dallas as what's called a destination Pride City. We have a number of people who come in town for the Grambling Prairie View game, and so we always have Pride in conjunction with that game. So we are trying to advertise what everything that goes on that weekend so we can build it more of a destination mm-hmm. city. So we have a lot of local presence, and we're gaining in that kind of people from all around coming.
Mm-hmm. The Black Pride movement, these Black Pride events mm-hmm. go on all over the country mm-hmm. Throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's an organization, if anyone is interested, it's called the International Federation of Black Prides. Mm-hmm. And they typically report, and it's actually international. They have an international presence. Most of the prides that go on within the world as it relates to Black Prides. And even a lot of prides, some prides in different cities are also coupled with Hispanic Pride or Latino Pride. So some of them are actually Black and brown.
Right. And the fact that this one is 2 weeks after Dallas Pride, one had nothing to do with the other. The reason you're scheduled now has to do with the game that goes on at the Cotton Bowl
right.
this weekend.
And depending, because the game changes based off of when Texas OU wants to have their game. So sometimes, I mean, last year was literally we had the Pride Parade that Sunday, and then that Tuesday we were into Black Pride. So it was all within kind of
right, it depends on what a fair start
right,
all that,
like
but that's
mm-hmm.
you're scheduling around that, actually, not around Dallas Pride, and you won't be having a parade.
We will not be having, not because, this year.
Because we just had one. Actually, yes. This weekend, Saturday, is Fort Worth's Pride Parade.
Right. And also this weekend is LifeWalk.
And LifeWalk, yeah. Right.
And Fort Worth.
LifeWalk here in Lee Park, and Fort Worth Pride in downtown Fort Worth.
Okay.
Yeah, it starts at about 10 in the morning. They're doing Pride in the morning. But DFW Pride, one of the things you said is on Friday, Fahari Arts is
right.
going to be performing. What's the program and where's it going to be?
It will be at the Host Hotel, which is Marriott City Center Hotel on Pearl Street. And again, it's our normal format for the first half, and the second half is our annual slam, a competitive poetry competition with $500 in cash prizes to be given away. Our feature of the event is our hometown hero, Miss Karen Rodriguez. One of the features, and then our kind of national feature is Uriah Bell, and he hails from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be a night of fire, which our whole season is dedicated to fire. So let's see how many times I can make references to fire.
To fire. And what were a couple of the other events that you mentioned that are going on that DFW Pride Movement is putting
it's
on?
Doing. So some of the big events, again, Friday during the day, all day long, is the community summit, LGBT community summit, where we are in dialogue with some of the national figures that they've brought in. Uriah Bell is definitely one. Cleo Monaga, who is a cultural activist, will be here to speak with us. We have some guests from the White House that are coming to do some conversation around HIV and AIDS, and then our local community as well. And even, you know, Vinton Jones, who founded DFW Pride Movement, and he's now residing in D.C., will be reporting, like, you know, the view from the hill and what that means for Dallas and things like that. And then
When did Vinton move?
A while.
Really?
Probably. He moved right after Pride last year, so we're looking about a year.
Okay.
But has constantly been in conversation and in dialogue with what's going on in Dallas, and still has a presence on the board of DFW Pride Movement. So Those are some of the things.
Okay, now one of the questions that always comes up is, why do you need a separate pride? Regular pride always gets, why do you need to have pride in the first place? So it's the same sort of question. But with DFW, Black Pride, is that a... what are some of the good reasons for it?
Well, and I think the question is not necessarily why do you need another pride. It is why do you need a black this, that, or the other, right? And why can't you participate in what everybody else is doing? Whether it be pride or even Black History Month, like, why do you need a black prince? And, you know, and I approach that question with another question. It's, you know, well, why do we need to separate the continents, right? Why don't we just talk about the world as this is the world? And I think what we have to realize and accept and appreciate is that we have cultural differences. And that is, there's nothing wrong with that, right? And so it doesn't make us, it shouldn't be divisive, but, you know, we create this division within our communities and our cultural differences. But I just, there are things that we need to talk about. You know, there's our identity that we need to explore and appreciate. So there, as long as we have cultural differences, and I don't think they're going away, there should be a pride in every color of the rainbow, and things like that. And then there should be a unifying source or occasion that we all come together and say, hey, this is what we talk about, and this is what we identified and discovered and celebrated. And what did y'all talk about? And let's celebrate that together. So
it's building community.
It is.
We don't have dinner every night with just our family.
Exactly.
We, you know, explore the world.
Exactly. And I mean, though, having informed black queers who can celebrate their culture and know their identity only benefits the world, right? It benefits the black community and all this, that, and the, but it benefits. And even when we talk about what Fahari does for the city of Dallas, I constantly ask people not to pigeonhole it as this black queer arts organization, because we don't work and live in this black queer community. We live in society. So, you know, when you encounter a coworker who has come to a Fahari event, you know, that event has changed your interaction with that person, and you should be grateful, you know, no matter who you are, as it relates to color or sex and sexuality and things like that. So, and we need to think about that in every community that's different from what is considered norm and things like that.
Why don't we take our break right here? We're talking to Harold Stewart. He is one of the founders of Fahari Arts. Fahari Arts is one of the partner organizations of DFW Pride Movement, and Dallas Black Pride is going on this week through the weekend. Main hotel is the Marriott Downtown.
Right, for DFW Pride Movement, their host hotel is Marriott Center, Marriott City Center, and for Dallas Southern Pride, it's the Park Inn. They just changed it. It used to be the Radisson, so I think it is the Park Inn Radisson off of the freeway here, Simmons, I believe.
So lots of parties this weekend, but lots of cultural events and sessions and workshops and all kinds of stuff. Your website is dfwpridemovement.org.
Right. So the website for DFW Pride Movement is dfwpridemovement.org. There's also DallasSouthernPride.org. And then for the women specifically, there's DallasHerStories2011.com/org.
Okay, I'm going to let you take a break after that one. We're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We'll be back with more right after this.
Dallas Voice, a Texas LGBT media company, has covered news, entertainment, culture, and opinion in the North Texas LGBT community for more than 25 years. Every week, Dallas Voice reaches more than 45,000 North Texas LGBT readers in print. DallasVoice.com informs more than 170,000 visitors every month, with breaking news appearing throughout the day, every day in the Instant Tea blog. Dallas Voice is proud to support KNON Community Radio.
If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is the voice of the people, KNON FM, the best radio station in the city, according to D Magazine and now also the Dallas Observer. We have one more best of that we need to hit. That's the Dallas Voice's best of. Which is kind of funny since I write for Dallas Voice. You would think.
Well, now Dallas Voice has its own radio show, so would they be choosing their own?
We have a bigger audience here, so we have more people that I can tell go on and make your votes. Our guest today is Harold Stewart. He is one of the founders of Fahari Arts, which is based at the South Dallas Cultural Center. And has been around several years.
And I have a question.
Yeah.
If we want to find out what's going on with Fahari Arts, do you have a website or do you go through the South Dallas Cultural Center?
We have a website, Fahari, F-A-H-A-R-I, Arts, A-R-T-S, Institute.org. We're working on keeping it updated. our Facebook page tends to have more daily activity and it's updated regularly. But that is the website. Or, you know, just call me. Harold Stewart. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who want my number. 214-960-7791. Send me a text. And we had a board meeting yesterday. And so one of the things the board decided is that we have to start tweeting. And so we will have a Twitter presence probably tomorrow. So those are some ways.
Good luck with that.
Learn to stop speaking like coherent English when you Twitter.
Exactly. And it's like, what is RT and what is this code? Uh-huh. And it's like, you know, I just got good at MailChimp, but they're like, nobody opens emails anymore.
We have Facebook. We, you know, we have our own website, but none of us are Twitterers.
140 characters. You got to master it. So.
But with these ridiculous codes that are in the middle, so even if it's just one sentence, I can't read them.
Hey, it's a language for a generation in a certain culture. So either we're going to, you know, learn to adapt or be confused.
I'll remain confused. Fahari started as an arts organization, and it became a community building organization, really. How did that happen?
Organically.
No.
We're still trying to figure it out. One of the things, you know, examining that and really, you know, trying to think about it, it is there's a saying that says, you know, you build it, they will come. And it really was the creation of a safe space in a community where there's limited spaces in general, but definitely limited safe spaces. And so that's really how it came about. Once this safe space was established, people began to come and to be in community with the artist, the organization, but also with one another in a way that they could only do primarily in the club. And not that there's anything wrong with the club, but, you know, when there's music and dancing, you know, there's limited interaction other than engagement other than that. Unless you're going outside for the smoke break. So, for those non-smokers who are tired of dancing and still have some energy, you know, what else is there out there? So, Fahari created that space, and that's really how we begin to, you know, build. And it's all something, a big key was it was constant, right? So, one of the reasons the clubs are successful, they are open pretty much every day of the week. So it's a constant space. So for at least there's a place you can come at least once a month to have this community dialogue and build and get to see yourself presented in a light that you may not be able to otherwise. So that's how it started. Now, how is that maintained is where we are now. So how do we continue to maintain? Because the community constantly changes. There's some queer child who is old enough to drive now. And when you think about Dallas has been the largest growing city in the last 10 years. Well, a lot of those people are black, and a lot of those people are black and queer. So how do you engage them and continue to build that and even learn from their experiences wherever they've been? And, you know, coming out is not like turning 18. It happens at various ages and stages. So then how do you deal with the varying level of coming out or wanting to get the knowledge and things like that? So now we're at that place of examining how do we maintain that?
And how do you maintain that?
Well, we're at that place of evaluation. And I think, you know, my best friend, Ashley Wilkinson, always says, you know, you just do the work, you know, and continue to do the work in the ways, you know, that you are doing it. Still have a feel where the people have a voice at the table, that it feels very grassroots. It is accessible to them. And I think that's some of the way. But we are looking at it.
Because there's no shortage of gay, black, gay and lesbian and transgender and bisexual artists out there.
Right. Our people. You know, we're the people's organization. So while there's no shortage of artists, I mean, every time we do Queerly Speaking, and now the numbers average 130 people, then we come celebrate at the Strip and all stuff. Then there's 200 to 300 other black queer people that we've never seen. And, you know, and it's just like, wow. Mm-hmm. You know,
And there's still even, you know, hundreds and thousands out there that
are not
connected
right.
to any of that.
So, and because I always think, well, oh, we're not doing our job because they're not coming. And it's just like, wow, do we have a space to even contain everyone if they did come? And, you know, 50% of the audience, Queerly Speaking, is always new.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
All right, which is great. I'm just thinking, wow. And, you know, I need to go back to the days of a black book or a Rolodex, because many people know me and they've seen me and I've seen them, but it's hard to remember. Mm-hmm. But it's also very exciting, because this is thousands of informed people who are out celebrating their pride, getting their identity. And when you talk about the thousands that are not out, you know, it's just like, you know, I'm reevaluating this whole idea of a minority, right? It's just like, at what point do we become the majority? Because there's literally thousands upon thousands of us out there, and many in this community.
Let's talk a little bit about your film series. You mentioned it at the beginning of the show, but we haven't talked about it at all. What do you have coming up?
The next film we're looking in November. Our season is geared towards Fire, the production that happened in the 20s. From Langston Hughes, Ornel Hurston, Bruce Nugent were some of the queer contributors to this publication. It was a one-time publication. It was really, you know, black young literary figures and artists who were going to the status quo. We have what is considered the first published black queer story that comes out, and things like that. So our whole season is geared towards, what does that look like today? Black, young, queer, literary figures and artists going against the status quo. So in November, which is the 85th kind of anniversary of when that publication was published, we want to show the film... Lord Jesus, hold on. Brother to Brother, which talks about Bruce Nugent, and he's still alive at that moment, and he's interacting with a younger brother in the generation, but he kind of takes him back in time to when they publish Fire. You get to see Langston and Zora's presence. So that's the film that we're looking at. With our queer film series, again, because you would be surprised the number of queer films for the black community that are out there. But that's another thing. When you're independent films in general have limited places they can be viewed. It's not a film festival. So that was an opportunity to give a space where we could view these films. A lot of very remarkable. Mm-hmm. So we created that to celebrate filmmaker, to support the filmmaker, because films are not cheap. So, you know, we pay to have these films, to screen them. And then also to talk about the various issues. Because we learn, I mean, one thing we're clear about our community, people respond to dance, people respond to theater, but people respond to film and lecture. So in this large community that we are identifying, we have to figure out who responds to what and which way.
Now, I can think of one local gay black filmmaker, Marlon Riggs.
Yes, and we have a whole Marlon Riggs Film Festival annually, the only one I know of.
Well, he is a local boy, so it is good that he's we're remembering him.
And I'm not to cut you off, but Marlon's something in his film, Black is Black Ain't, when he's on his bed of transition in the hospital, and Marlon says, as long as I have work, I'm not dead. Mm-hmm. And so each year when we put on the Marlon Riggs Film Festival and we include a Marlon Riggs work, we make sure Marlon is still alive.
Tell us a little bit about him. When did he die? Was
95, 94, 95, yeah, okay. I believe, fact check me please, he died And again, and you can see that if you view Black Is Black Game. You know, that was the last film. Many scenes are of him in his hospital bed. And right now, the whole thing, how do you make Martin relevant to this generation? You know, I'm born in 82. I am very privileged. A lot of battles have been fought before I even come into existence. And there's a lot of things that I'm just not aware of. And so this whole, and even though I grew up alongside of things like Marlon Riggs having his film screened on public TV, I'm not engaged in that conversation. But now I'm a conscious, you know, Black queer person. But the technology is different. You know, the ways to keep my attention are different. So how do you bridge that gap? And then how do you talk about Marlon Riggs paving the way so other filmmakers who are Black and queer, the battle is not, you know, so intense and you're not starting over? Because his film, you know, was on the floor of Congress. And that was the battle that he fought, you know, so you don't have to fight that. Audre Lorde talks about doing the work that she did so another generation of queer people wouldn't have to redefine self. So, you know, when we do things like that to honor our heroes and sheroes and queeros, you know, they labored, you know, really, really labored so we can enjoy everything that we enjoy today.
Are there any other local Black filmmakers that...
Well, we have that way. We have Q. Rock Ragsdale, and you can see some of her films and the things that she's doing on Q Rock TV is one. We have some filmmakers that that we're not necessarily aware of, but I mean there are a lot of filmmakers. And even if you think about, we have film programs at the various academic institutes, so they're filmmakers out there. But the film community, you know, getting in touch with the larger community has been an issue. Many of them are raising money, trying to submit to Fest. So how do we create these spaces where you can submit and be seen locally?
I know who I want to ask you about. One of my favorite writers. You mentioned, you just pushed her off, Zora.
Oh, it's Zora. Zora Neale Hurston. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about her. She was fascinating.
She was fascinating. And the fascinating thing about Zora being one of the Harlem Renaissance writers is that, you know, she decided that her people, and I was just reading, I was watching, Guys Are Watching God, the movie, that her people's language, as they spoke it and created, was important. So important that it should be studied, it should be celebrated. And, you know, so that's one of the fascinating things about
it. And let's just even go back. She was a novelist.
Right.
From the 1930s, 40s.
Well, Harlem Renaissance kind of era on. So she was a writer, but also she is a researcher, right? And a cultural activist in those regards. And so Zora has, you know, her most famous work is Their Eyes Are Watching God, but she collaborated on a play with Langston, Lord Jesus, Muse, and has another name, pray for me. But again, the big thing about Zora is she's given voice to even people in the Black community who consider that kind of language, that kind of voice, shouldn't be talked about or published. You know, we're trying to get away from that. And so she showed us the importance, you know, of our vernacular.
And she was just a good storyteller.
Exactly. I mean, and had a beautiful voice and beautiful style. You know, you talk about her past and her style. So she was the image, you know, of beauty as well.
Right. I actually became interested in her work. I was interviewing an author, and I can't think of her name, who had written her biography.
Okay.
And I went back and read some of the works because the biography itself was just so interesting and so rich that I started reading some of her works, and wonderful, wonderful writer. Can you think of another writer that we should know about, maybe a more contemporary one or somebody that you've had? I mean, Elin Harris is one of the obvious ones that...
Right. There's Martin K. White. He's just been published. He's just published two books from Redbone Press. I'm trying to think. You know, I read three different texts at the same time. Right now, I'm reading a book by a gentleman named Kai Wright, who's out of New York, and it's about, I'm trying to think of the title. It's about, you know, three young men growing up on the streets of New York, and they're queer men of color. What else am I currently reading? Right now I'm reading a Jenny's book. Some of the literary figures that I love, you know, Essa Kemp Hill comes to mind. The Brother to Brother anthology that he finished for Joseph Beam comes to mind. Sharon Bridge for his work is so rich. There's a book list somewhere. So those are some of the current people. But yeah, Redbone Press is a good site to look at. And then also there is an organization for Black queer literary writers, or writers, and it is fireandink.org. So mm-hmm. if you want to see who's connected with that organization, they represent kind of nationally Black queer writers.
We're coming up to the end of the hour. I want to thank you, Harold Stewart, for being here, for staying up all night in order to make sure that you got here on time today.
You rock. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And if somebody wants more information about Fahari Arts, first of all, you're having a an event this Friday night at the mm-hmm. Marriott downtown, but if somebody just wants more information about your group, give us the information again.
www.fahari, F-A-H-A-R-I, artsinstitute.org.
And thank you so much for being with us. You know, this is a point of our show where our producer, Thomas Pearson, usually comes in and disavows any knowledge of our existence, but he's not here today. But our station manager is here. Dave, would you like to disavow any knowledge of our existence and our being here?
KNON takes responsibility for absolutely nothing except running the radio station. Whatever these crazy volunteers do, we had no idea they were going to do it. So don't call me.
How's that? Does that work?
That's very close to what Thomas does. It just mentions the idiots that are usually here. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. Next week we have Utes. I got Goyle Utes and Boy Utes and other Utes who from Utes Voice, Texas. They'll be with next week. And thank you for listening. For Laron, who will be here at the beginning of the show, as usual, and Patty Fink and Dave Taffet will be back with more Lambda Weekly next week.